My name is Terry Scott, and I conducted the following interview with John Lewis at his home in San Francisco on August 31st, 2006. John was a staff photographer in the very early days of the United Farm Workers Union. He arrived in Delano 4 months after the start of the grape strike and literally shot thousands of photographs during 1966, 1967, and 1968. From 2005 until his death in 2009, John spent countless hours in the darkroom, developing ancient rolls of film and making prints of his photographs so that they could be presented on the website of the Farm Worker Movement Documentation Project. It should be noted that at various times during the interview, John refers to Leroy by first name only. For clarification purposes, when he mentions Leroy, John is referring to Leroy Chatfield, the director of the Farm Worker Movement Documentation Project.
I scribbled a few points to hit here, but I don't know.
Yeah. But why don't you go ahead and...
Okay. Yeah, I like this quote from Churchill, who observed of a colleague, or maybe it was an adversary, that he is a modest man, and he has much to be modest about. And that can be said of me. And maybe sometime I'll just turn the sound down and look at some good photographs right now. But I don't know how these things will segue. But I remember I'd been on a couple of weeks. I thought that would be it, come back to grad school. But I said, the hell with it, let's go for it. Talked to Caesar, said, yeah, come on down. So I came back here, San Francisco, and borrowed some money to set up a dark room. And there's a Bay Area photographers group that someone took me to. And I made a pitch for any donated darkroom equipment they might be able to give to the farm workers. And I showed some photographs I'd made there at the photo center. And this very nice, frail, white-haired old lady got up and attacked me. Said, whose side are you on? You're supposed to be impartial and even-handed. And I didn't know at the time. It was Imogene Cunningham, who was a local Bay Area photographer, but her reputation is worldwide. And so I just pleaded guilty to being a propagandist. I'd sold out for $5 a week and meals in the strike kitchen. And I didn't find out until later who the hell she was. And she was a nice lady, but she was on the attack. And I don't know, Richard Street, monumental work, and there's been two volumes, the second one yet to appear, photographing farm workers in California, just looked at the whole range of farm labor photography, from, you know, glass plate negatives to guys shooting on the border for immigrants right today. And I've got a couple things in there, and it's nice to be part of the continuum, because I'm really just a footnote. I mean, there have been guys spent decades out there sweating in that sun, and I had a year and a half maybe, and you know, a college kid dropping out for a year and donating and then going back to school.
So but, now, how old were you, John, when you arrived in Delano?
Probably, I'd had 4 year hits in the Marine Corps, so I was 25, 26. Mm-hmm. And
how did you originally end up in Delano? What brought you down
there? Yeah, life is not something you plan. Like, I stumbled into photography and into the grape strike. But I was a theatrical photographer quite a bit in college, and the year before at San Jose State, I photographed Luis Valdez's play, Shrunken Head of Pancho Villa. So we hit it off. And I remember, inadvertently, he was going to San Francisco to work with a meme troupe here in the city next year. And I was considering San Francisco State. They had a master's program, creative arts. You could work in five or six departments and not master anything, and there was no language required. So I said, hey, I might be up there, man. How can I look you up? And so he gave me an address. And so I didn't get admitted till January, and so I came up that fall to get situated and looked up Luis. He had just been down to the town he was born in, Delano, mm-hmm. where this little grape strike had started. But I was enamored of San Francisco, and it was a big town after San Diego. And I wasn't hearing him, but finally, January, just before school was to start, I went down there with him for a couple of weeks, thinking it'd be a nice photo essay. Mm-hmm. And so I blew in and got blown away, man. This wasn't anticipated. And I didn't speak that much Spanish, but it was the Filipinos in the picket line, you know, talking about dignity mm-hmm. and a man's worth that got me.
Yeah.
And so I just went in and talked to Caesar. Hey, you guys need a full-time photographer, man. What can we do about that?
Mm-hmm.
He said, yeah, come on down. We can do a little something.
So you were just doing just photography full-time then?
Pretty much,
Didn't shift you into doing some other job?
They asked Ballas to go out on the boycott, and he refused. And they asked Luis years later to go out on the boycott, the Teatro disband, and he said no, and split. But, So anyhow, coming back here, I borrowed some money to set up a darkroom, and after being there for a month full-time, a little more, the March Sacramento started.
Yeah.
And that turned things around, the publicity and...
Now, were you with the March the time?
Well, not perhaps the entire way. Remember, midway, the publicity was really great, and Caesar didn't say to do it, but he suggested it would be a good idea if you went back to the lab in Delano and got some prints out for the boycott department.
Yeah. Now, were you doing all your own developing
at that point? And I would just say, well, Caesar, next week we're taking a day off, right? Why don't I go down there the day off mm-hmm. and just print all night, and I'll come back the next morning. So I did that, and I missed the first couple of hours of one day's march, but otherwise I was there for a long time. And it was just the experience of a lifetime, and hopefully we're looking at some good photos of it right about now.
Yeah.
But
It looked like, from a lot of the shots, that how was that as far as planning what you wanted to shoot for the march? Like, did you have to go ahead and kind of scout out where you wanted?
Sometimes, had a motorcycle. I would ride on ahead to scout places perhaps to be. I'd climb a phone pole or a light tower sometimes. And a lot of times, by the time you got up there, the march was halfway past. But again, you persevered and you got enough. But a friend of mine who had taught at the University of Arizona had approached them about being an archive for the film. Mm-hmm. And the department head reminded him that the title of their they have a whole building was School of Creative Photography, and we don't do documentary.
Mm-hmm.
So, la-di-da. Put in my place, because there was a phenomenon back in the 60s, I don't know if it carried on, of a street photographer, movement photographer. There were all the peace marches and mm-hmm. troops loading on the docks and People's Park. And, you know, these hot shots to trot, available light, Tri-X chroniclers were a phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And we wouldn't own a tripod or use flash fill to be kind to a face. You know, you shoot enough, you're bound to get something. And so, I guess the arty-farty folk looked down on us because we were out there in the street just banging away, and we weren't too finesse or elegant. But again, you like to think some things came out of that.
Yeah.
But I don't believe it continues today so much. And, you know, in Street's book, it's really neat. I mean, he's in the library or the bookshelves near Steichen and Stieglitz, and not far from Steinbeck. But just looks at the whole gamut of photography, and way the hell back, I mean, they would have tents out in the fields for a dark room or a covered wagon where they would coat their plates and develop the glass plates. And on a tripod, you'd look long and hard before you made an exposure. And sometimes you had to take the lens cap off, let the light in, and put it back. So portraiture was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that was the start. And the things just progressed when, I guess, the press cameras, speed graphics, was still pretty much a tripod thing. But you had to put the film holder in, take the dark slide out, take an exposure, and then put it back in and turn it over and pull out the dark slide, take the second exposure.
Wow.
And, you know, this was time-consuming. Now, I guess the 120 Rolleiflex, which didn't have interchangeable lenses, came along, and you got 12 exposures, which could be in good sequence. A little rewind took a while. It was really 35 millimeter that put candid photography on the map, because you could have 36 exposure rolls. Mm-hmm. And they even had motor drives with backs 250 exposures. So fish in a barrel.
Yes.
And the original Nikon F didn't have through the lens metering, which hurt me, because you're just guessing a lot of times. Low light conditions, your hand holding, the slow shutter speed, and a wide open aperture. Mm-hmm. And a lot of stuff is fuzzy or not enough density on the film. Mm-hmm. But again, it just freed up photography, and where it's going digitally, I don't know. But I remember some prints I made in the 60s, graded paper. You could pull out detail in the shadows better, because the papers they make today don't have as much silver in them for wet developing. And I tried to print one that I printed using the film that I couldn't get a print of. It just, nothing there. It just went to the black mostly. Yeah. Whereas the old papers, you could pull it out. Now, hopefully with a computer you can rectify that, but I'm not up to speed there. And that's the history of it, right? Because, you know, earlier on, I mean, before you made an exposure, you looked and you pondered and you composed. And you got some classic images. Mm-hmm. Whereas these guys with the motor drives, you know, they got to look through 200 negatives to get what they want. And they might have been better served to pull back and be a little more selective. Mm-hmm. Because bam, bam, bam is just the way you do it as a journalist. But it's, I can't say cheating, but it's fish in a barrel, actually.
Mm-hmm. And now, do you have any preference as far as black and white versus color, or... You know, how do you make a decision about whether you're going to shoot with one type or another?
Well, I had a little moderate zoom lens, 43 to 86, for mid-range color. You could compose the zoom lens on color, because in the darkroom you can enlarge, and you don't need to worry about it, composition. But a color slide, you like it to be what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And actually, I had, when Jim Lorenz passed through setting up California Rural Legal Assistance, mm-hmm. he saw some stuff, so he bought a few prints for his office. And I was able to go down to Bakersfield, get 100 foot of movie film, 35 millimeter ektachrome, mm-hmm. that I could bulk load into cassettes. And then I developed in a friend's bathroom in San Jose. And so that let me shoot color on the march, because it's just too damned expensive. Mm-hmm. And so black and white is so much more affordable and expendable. And I had, in those 8 or 9 months initially, I'd shot 256 rolls of black and white. And it took ages to proof them all after I'd left. But a look photographer passed through just after I left, and in 2 weeks he shot 600 rolls of color film.
Wow.
With a motor drive. And I wonder where all that ended up, because he must have some great stuff. But again, it's just a matter of being there and being lucky. Because I was there full-time, and so many of these widely known photographers would come down for a couple days or something. Mm-hmm. And I would be there day after day, which yeah. gave me stuff that...
I would imagine. I mean, you know, a lot of people, I think, when they look at your stuff, Dorothea Lange comes to mind.
Oh, Lord,
and
yeah.
you seem to have such an affinity and empathy for the people you're photographing.
I actually very often photograph pattern or geometry.
Do you?
You put people into a pattern. And, you know, out of focus foregrounds, framing a face or something like that. Whereas the really great shooters just did it simply and directly.
Mm-hmm.
And the subject came forth and its inherent worth was mm-hmm. obvious. And all this arty framing is something the photojournalists got to jazz it up, right, for publication.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the pure shooters just approach people directly.
Mm-hmm. So it's something about the person's face that calls to you? Or what catches your eye when you're going to shoot someone?
Well, I was lucky that I was one with them, so it's presumptuous to shove a camera in somebody's face. But at least you were accepted, and you were avant-garde, actually. And so they didn't get offended, but there are things that I would never have attempted coming in for just a day or something like that.
Right.
It was...
You were in a unique position because you had that entree since you were out day after day. Now, you obviously spent a lot of time photographing Caesar, too.
Oh, yes.
And
he got used to me.
Wondering if you have any, you know, favorite memories or interesting things that happened in taking photos of him.
He always take a year off and read. And I'm barely able to do that now in Social Security. But he never did. But it was interesting that the interview with his granddaughter collecting jazz LPs in New York. I didn't know that. He was a jazz aficionado. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have time to kick back and listen to music, man. He was besieged from all directions. Mm-hmm. And I was a little bit taken aback when they moved up to La Paz. But I remember at 40 Acres, he had that corner office. There was a constant succession of people pounding on his door to see Caesar, right? Mm-hmm. There was a hermano. And he was just besieged by people. He couldn't set foot out in front without people wanting to talk with him or something. And, you know, this is what he was. He was related to the people. Mm-hmm. And you get him up in the mountains, I guess it was better for him. Mm-hmm. But there were some of us a little disturbed at the remoteness of it. Mm-hmm. And I spent four nights up there, the 40th anniversary of the march. And it was a nice, restful place, and green at the time. Mm-hmm. But...
But most of your photographs of Caesar were down in Delano, right?
At some point, both he and Richard, his brother, started seeing hairstylists and having razor cuts. And the Compassino cut was no more, man. It was Hollywood glitz. And so this thing among us gets noticed, and we wonder a little bit, but what the hell. But yeah, he was just a... how he found time to do what he did, because he was just constantly go, 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 you know, and I don't know how much sleep he got, but, you know, you have to be single-minded, I guess, to do what he did, and he did it, damn it, and salute him for it.
Did you ever talk with him about photography as an art form? I mean, did he
was a photographer, and he had no personal time for it. But he came by the darkroom once and said, yeah, we'll come develop some film one of these days. He never did. But I had this washroom back of the garage. The Teatro Campesino had the garage. And then the summer, the chemistry would get up to 190 degrees. You had to develop in the middle of the night. The temperature would come down. Didn't even have a scrounge of fan, I don't believe. There are times you just take your bed roll out to the front lawn and sleep there, man. It was just heat, yuck. But again, it served its purpose, and I couldn't do much with things in terms of proofing or filing until I got back in school, because the funds were so very limited.
Yeah.
Got anything else?
Are there any maybe photographs that got away? I mean, do you have any recollections of something you wish you had gotten a photo of that just didn't turn out or weren't able to get a photo?
No, I don't know. I guess I had color on that camera when I was trespassing, and the Georgia security guard, Herschel Nunez, came up and ordered me off the property. I went to snap a picture in his face, and he swung on the camera. And I got a shot of it, somewhat blurred. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can show it. We'll dig it out here. But I got that shot, the guy swinging on me. Of course, the real violence happened early on, and I didn't go until the fourth month. So, you know, I was afraid of the Teamsters that fall, but I didn't have the growers pointing shotguns at you as they did initially.
Yeah.
And look at the guys that were there before the strike are our heroes. Before the publicity came, right, they were there, they were committed. And, you know, Bill Usher, Doug Adair, and El Malcriado before the strike. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were... the originales.
Yeah. Now, was El Malcriado able to publish some of your early photos?
Yeah, I was giving them stuff, and they had a little Polaroid that was instantaneous, right, which was a lot of it, but then Ballas would send stuff from Fresno, and there were people Harvey Richards had that great photograph of Dolores atop of the car with a Welga sign.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on the cover of Gene Nelson's book, Welga.
Yeah.
It was the first thing to be published. I remember I was going back to Frisco, and Bill Escher had said, "Hey, can you give us anything, photos you might include in the book?" And I said, "Oh, geez, Bill, I'm just so strapped that maybe next time, next publication." I missed having some things in that first book, which would have been nice. But
yeah. Now, you did go on to have your own book put together, though, and,
and
the film,
I
too.
I did it as my master's thesis, and I learned to run the press to do it,
mm-hmm.
and only did 500 copies and never found a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And you would hope that that and the film would give you enough reputation to get a college teaching job. And have a little floor under you financially.
Mm-hmm.
And that never happened, so I just kept working and printing until
mm-hmm.
2004, and the computers ran me out.
Yeah, I guess that really brought in some huge changes. For
yeah, I saw it coming, and I just wasn't going to adapt out with it.
Yeah. So, let's see, what else do I have? What what did you find is the hardest type of photograph to shoot? Is there something that is just really challenging from a photographer's standpoint, I guess?
Oh, yeah, I've not been a photographer in decades. I shoot color slides when I travel, Machu Picchu and whatnot. But you hung back a lot on the fringes. I mean, aggressive photographers would elbow their way up to the front, right? I know at the end of the March to Sacramento, Jim Marshall, the rock photographer, got right up there in front and was shooting some really nice stuff of Caesar. And I was shooting from the side, and I went up in the dome and shot the big crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I was tired.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wasn't aggressive enough to get in there, and because he got some really nice stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you like to think this stuff would get together somehow, someday. This book has a bunch of it, but there's so much out there.
Yeah.
And I guess what I'm doing currently, printing negs I've never printed before for one good print to scan for the web, is fashioning my tombstone in cyberspace. These little bits and blobs and squiggles on a monitor
mm-hmm.
is how this stuff will live.
Yeah.
Whether someone wants to click on 500 files on Leroy's website, I don't know.
Yeah.
But again, this has been in the closet, unviewed for 40 years, you know, so it's nice that it's out there in some form for whatever.
Yeah. Now that must be interesting for you going back and now developing these things.
Yeah,
shot that many years ago.
I've been finding things I didn't know were there, which is great. And I've still got several hundred more to do here before I get rid of the negatives, if I do. And it's been a concern, though, that if I were to succumb, everything would go into a dumpster out front and in the landfill. I wouldn't be far behind, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like to get the negatives in the repository somewhere and be off my back, because I have an obligation to preserve the damn things.
Yeah, you should.
And Paul Chavez wants me to just give them to the union or the service center there in La Paz. And talking with friends, we just wonder, after this generation who knew Cesar passes on, will that maintain and be there 25 years from now? We just wonder, frankly. And Martin Luther King's foundation, I would hope, would persevere, but you think Caesar's foundation will as well, but again, you just don't know. And a place like Bancroft would be the ideal place for the negatives, right? And you know that 100 years from now they'll be accessible. But again, it's in the lap of the gods, man, because we got no control. Lordy.
Yeah. When you think back to, say, 40 years ago when you were shooting this, did you have a sense at that time of how historically important what you were doing was, or did that come later?
Well, it was later, because we didn't really expect to win. I mean, it was a good struggle. Let's make a showing, a stand. And when that march set out, there was no assurance that it would get to Sacramento, you know. But enough people came along the way and, you know, took a few marchers into their home and gave them breakfast the next morning. And then joined the march for a couple date or something, and it had built. And by the end, we were just taking over the main parks in town, sleeping right there in our bedrolls, you know, middle of town, to hell with them. They weren't going to run us out. Mm-hmm. And we had these great rallies in the evenings that really did much to just spread the union's message. And they couldn't stop it from there, you know. And without the march, I think it would have just dwindled. Each successive harvest would have been token picketing, but you can't forestall. You can't really call them scabs, but people come from out of the area because it's a better wage. You can't blame them, really. And
of course, yeah, the march really did bring it to the forefront of the nation's consciousness. Yeah.
But yeah, we didn't. They were doing it for the kids, you know, and they got the contracts. And I remember going out after the Shenley contract, shooting the fields just one afternoon. My buddy Roberto Roman, because I didn't have access to the fields normally, I was shooting the picket line, right? It was nice to get in there just for an afternoon. Of course, guys like Ernest Lowe and Bala have been shooting for years, and they've got, you know, the whole gamut of things. I'm just a little Johnny come lately and got a few things, but it's not like their archives. And so again, I'm a footnote in the history of it, but there's a couple good strong photographs that will last, I hope.
Yeah, there's some beautiful stuff you shot. Now you have a lot of pictures of children. How did that come about?
They were just there on the picket line so much of the time, and the meeting running around. And they're just charming, you know. And that's what the folks were sacrificing for. And I got a whole batch of kids that I sent to Leroy you haven't seen yet that hopefully he'll be sending you at some point. Uh-huh.
Are kids easier to photograph than adults, less self-conscious, or are they shy sometimes with the camera?
Oh, hard to say. I mean, you can offend adults. You're invading their privacy. Whereas kids, here's a camera. Hey, hooray. And they'll play with you. But adults shy away very often, and you got to be careful. Oh, Lordy, anything...
Yeah, anything else you want to add?
What does treadmill mean? Oh, yeah, I don't know how... you might work this in, but 99, the hospital got off a treadmill, you know, prior to surgery.
In
1999. And carotid artery surgery. And it just popped in my head to ask the correlation between being sedentary and becoming sediment, and it's quite high, but that just flashed into my head, and I like it. I don't know if we can use it or not, but yeah. I toss it out there. Yeah. Where is this list I found? Street, the Xerox of it.
You certainly weren't sedentary when you were marching on the march. That must have
160 pounds,
been
maybe.
Challenging.
Yeah, here's a little thing that is June of '66. Print sent out, and then request pending. I was showing how much I had done to get little funding for what people wanted, and I guess I can just read this.
Sure.
Whatever. This was in June '66, and 48 8x10s to Alex Hoffman, the lawyer, for an injunction and. Case, I forget what the hell that was, but more or less 100 8x10s to the boycott mailing for the boycott centers around, and 50 assorted sizes, a 10-foot display panel. I guess we did that for the student summer volunteer program, which was that summer, and 10 8x10s to Denver, 3 8x10s to Los Angeles, 17 8x10s to the Industrial Unions Department of AFL-CIO in Washington, D.C., 8 8x10s to the Movement film strip. Not the newspaper Movement or what? And then 10 to 15 for El Malcriado. And actually, it was a pain drying the damn things that many. these are hundreds of prints in a month's time.
Yeah.
And you were doing them much of an evening because you're on the picket line during the day. But then things that request pending, and this was to make a case for the funding to do these, but there may be 150 8x10s for the boycott centers. Oh, 10 8x10s for the National Students Association, 6 8x10s for ACLU in Berkeley, and then 20 11x14s for the LA boycott. So you were just sending stuff out, and what use was made of them? Fine, you know. Mm-hmm. There was no payday, $5 a week. And you just felt useful to get this out there. You're propagandist, frankly.
Yes.
And if it became art down the road, fine. But again, you were just serving a function and propagandizing.
But it really brought it alive. I mean, to people who weren't in Delano or weren't on the mm-hmm. picket line, seeing your photographs, you know, gave them a visual image that they could hold in their brain when they thought.
Yeah, I have no idea what use was made of them. And I know. You see that History Detectives on PBS when Marshall Gans on the Virgin of the Guadalupe banner?
No, I didn't see that.
They ran it down, and actually got donated back to the Union from SF State, the banner of the Virgin that led the march. And they interviewed Marshall Gans, and he had one of my photographs yet from those days. So I'll have to get back in touch with him sometime. But
yeah. Now, you knew Marshall when you first went down, too, as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Actually, Luis and I bummed a ride with him to Delano that first time. And it was bedrolls on the floor, maybe. And but it was so great. The 30th anniversary, there weren't that many people from the 60s. But the 40th anniversary, there were people I had not seen 40 years, and it was just so great. And you wish you had several days to have a beer and talk over old times. But how many of them know of Leroy's website? I hope most of them eventually will stumble upon it. And actually, some of the kids whose parents maybe never saw this will see their old man in cyberspace. And I don't know if they can pull a print from it or not. Can you make a screenshot off of a monitor?
Probably not high enough resolution to print well.
But again, early on, when I'd shoot a roll of color, we put a little 5-minute slideshow on the Friday night meetings. Mm-hmm. And that got a lot of hoots and hollers and catcalls.
I bet people love that.
Seeing
their faces in the photograph.
Remember, got a good laugh. Leroy didn't put them adjacent, but Camacho, Epifanio Camacho, one of the great stalwart pickets. Mm-hmm. There's a shot of him swinging that axe on the log,
mm-hmm.
and then a shot of him with a sandwich and his bare foot in the foreground, to show that he didn't hack his foot off. And that got a good laugh at one of those meetings. That was after the march. So, but again, Leroy didn't make the connection to put them together.
Yeah.
Maybe you will if you use them, I don't know.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's great. What was he chopping the wood for? Just for a fire where you're camping out on the march? Or?
Exercise, because it was a big-ass, big log.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know if he split it back for kindling or not. But he was just fantastic. And he was there at the 40th anniversary, and I gave him a little tour of the photo exhibit. It was great.
Yeah.
In Spanish, mostly.
Uh-huh.
But again, there's my high school. Go ahead.
I was just wondering, some of the audience that sees this might be in Spanish, and I was wondering if there's anything you could say in Spanish, a short little recap that might be cool.
I don't
just a thought.
Yeah. verbs simply elude me, you know. And,
it's just a wild thought.
I was impressed with Marshall Gans's Spanish. He could really rattle it off. Mm-hmm. Of course, he and Jessica Govea were a couple there. And,
I don't think you have to do any
slogan,
in
like a slogan or something in Spanish that you would.
No, I have yet to broach the subject, but I'll try to prevail on Luis Valdez to read my book on the tape. And I might try to do something visually along with that.
Yeah, that would be nice.
But I heard an old man's voice as I was sort of writing this thing, and he's a little too dynamic and forceful, maybe. I don't know. But I would like to attempt that.
He's definitely a forceful speaker.
Yeah, I'd like to attempt that someday, somehow, if I get some funding and time free and whatnot. But.
Yeah.
But how's your list doing?
I think I'm pretty good, actually.
List, treadmill, North Carolina. Actually, probably towards the end, maybe just read this Dorothea Lange quote that I love so much.
Wonderful.
It's an answer to Imogene.
Should I follow you, or are you going to bring it back?
I'll bring it over here.
Okay.
Actually, my first silk screen print ever was this, which I did a half a dozen slip covers.
Do you want me to film the silk screen?
No. Okay. You've got that, I think, as one of the photos.
Yeah, it's the cover. Yeah. This is Richard Chavez's hand.
Oh, is it Richard's hand?
Yeah. But I hand set the type. And I just stumbled on this and thing and broke it out into poetry. But our greatest photographer, and I think it's a consensus, Dorothea Lange wrote that, you know, we in our work can speak more than about our subjects. We can speak for them. We can more than speak of our subjects, we can speak with them. They, given tongue, will be able to speak with and for us. And that's something to ponder, and it justifies being a propagandist, perhaps, for a good cause. But, damn, there's some good days there.
Yeah, that's great.
So anyhow, I have no great wisdom to impart. And just...
Well, you were really a part of a unique point in history. Able to record it for all of us who weren't there.
As you go through life, may you fare well.
Do you have any words for photographers to come?
If you got the bug, you got to venture. You may fall on your ass, but, you know, if spirit moves you, you go for it. And you probably never make a living, but you'll have some satisfaction and meet some good people. And that's about all you can ask for, I guess, because nothing's guaranteed. And you take what you got when it's there, and there you are.